I'm Carson Stooley. With me is Fangraphs Managing Editor Dave Cameron, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. Yes, Dave Cameron, it is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. I'm Carson Sestouli, and you are Dave Cameron, as I mentioned.
I try to be myself, yes.
That's right. You are the managing editor of Fangraphs.com. I am the host of that site's podcast, in addition to some other editing duties that I perform. And what this is, however, is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, sponsored by Home Stand Sports, not Homeland Sports, Home Stand Sports. What we do here is to provide dispassionate and objective Blue Jays analysis using many of the same tools, the same methods that we employ at Fangraphs.com. Anyway, how are you, Dave Cameron?
I am good. How are you?
Okay, I'm very good. Let us first, of course, mention the efforts and the ambitions of our patron. As I say, it is homestandsports.com, and they, of course, facilitate, among other things, the Pitch Talks events. Can you please explain, Dave Cameron, briefly what a Pitch Talks event is?
It is a gathering of baseball fans in a particular city to talk about their team with broadcasters, writers, players, executives, general ne'er-do-wells, people who have an interest in the team or in baseball, to share fun stories, talk about how the team is doing, occasionally suffer together, depending on the city you are in, consume adult beverages, and generally have a good time.
All right, the next Pitch Talks event. It's available much of July being taken off because slow month in general. But this takes place, this is in Brooklyn, Monday, August 7th, 7 p.m. at the Bell House. It will feature Ben Lindbergh, who's the author, is The Only Rule Is You Gotta Do a Good Job.
The only rule is it has to work.
The only rule is it has to work. That sounds right. And also, of course, Ben Lindbergh, author of The Ringer, will be with Jeff Sullivan of Fangraphs.com. And they will record live an edition of Effectively Wild, which is, of course, the podcast that they record together and which is hosted at Fangraphs.com.
Yeah, it is more fun than this one. You should listen to their podcast.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. I think that's right. So that is what, August 7th, as I say. There are football and hockey-related events. So let me tell you about one more baseball-related one, another Pitch Talks event to take place Monday, September 18th. This is at 7 p.m. This takes place in San Francisco and will feature Enos Harris of Fangraphs.com, Grant Brisby of McCovey Chronicles. What do you think, McCovey Chronicles?
That is the name of his site.
And also, let us not forget to mention Bobby Evans, who is indeed the GM of the San Francisco Giants. Not the president. He's not President Al Tobley. No, what's his name?
Brian Sabian.
Brian Sabian. Yeah. No, it's Bobby Evans.
Yeah, that's going to be one of those events where we can, we mentioned commiseration. I think if you're a Giants fan and you want to get together and be like, what the hell? Yeah. Then that's the event for you.
Now, what the hell is something that that's a question that people might be asking about the Toronto Blue Jays. Dave Cameron, of course, we typically begin this analysis by reviewing the week briefly. What we find here is a week during which, dating back to last Monday, I guess, during which the team went 4-3, it appears. 4-3, including a couple wins against a generally good but flailing Yankees team, and splitting a series in Houston. Splitting is a bit of a generous term, though, because in the two losses, they conceded 31 runs, including a 19-1 loss. Yep. Right before the All-Star break. So it's difficult. Cameron, let me ask you, what sort of situation does the club find itself in with regard to postseason contention at this point?
Yeah, it's not good. 41 and 47 headed into the break, so they've got 3 weeks before the July 31st trade deadline, which they have to evaluate whether they want to try and add or subtract for the rest of the season. Six games under 500 with, say, whatever, 18 games to play in those 21 days, or, you know, probably because the All-Star break, maybe like 15 games to play in those 21 days, 16, something like that. So to get back to 500, they would have to go, you know, 12-6 if they played 18 games, or, you know, 13 and...
Yeah,
they'd have to win a bunch of games. This is bad math on my part at the moment. They would have to play exceptionally well the rest of July just to get back to 500 by the trade deadline. Most likely they're going to head into August under 500, and you're usually not buyers if you're under 500 heading into the trade deadline. So I think at this point, Mark Shapiro came out and gave kind of an interview last week where he talked about they're not blowing it up. Basically killed any idea of trading Josh Donaldson or Roberto Osuna. They're not going to go for some kind of full-scale rebuild. They're not going to tear this thing down to the start over. But Will they listen to Marco Estrada? Probably. If Joe Smith comes back healthy, will they listen to him? Probably. Will they listen on Jay Happ? Maybe, even though he's under control for another year. I think the reality is the Jays at this point are probably sellers.
Okay. Well, so let's get to that in a second, some of the specifics about the Jays and how those trades might shake out. What I would like to announce right now is that this is the week at Fangraphs when you produce your trade value series, in which essentially you rank from 1 to 50 over the course of the week. The top trade assets in baseball, taking into account not only the relatively near term projections for players, but also the contracts to which those players are signed. Have I characterized it well? Would you like to add anything to that?
No, that's about right.
Okay, all right. So now this is a bit of a thought exercise because one does not expect many or if any of the players on this list to be traded because they're so valuable. Jose Quintana is on the list. He's the Chicago White Sox pitcher, and he's a candidate to be traded. Perhaps there's one or two other names. I did want to mention briefly, though, the Blue Jays who appear on the list or who we can expect to find. Of course, the best Blue Jays player is Josh Donaldson, although I think he is omitted from the top 50.
He did not make the list, yeah.
Can you please explain what the sort of conditions that have to be met for such a good player not to appear on a trade value list?
Yeah, so generally when you're looking at trade value, it's a little different than just like overall performance. So you're factoring in contract status, which is the biggest factor. It is obviously, as we see with teams who are out of the race, they look to move their guys who aren't under control for multiple years. We just talked about Estrada and Joe Smith as free agents at the end of the year. The Blue Jays will be trying to trade those guys before they lose them for nothing this winter as free agents. Josh Donaldson is not a free agent this winter, but he is a free agent after next year. So any team who traded for him this summer would be getting him for essentially a year and a half. He's going to get a monster arbitration raise this winter, probably make over $20 million next year. So while Josh Donaldson is clearly worth more than $20 million, it's not like he's free. Teams would still have to fit him into their budget. Potentially he could take the salary that could go to some other good player. So when you're making a lot of money and you only have a year and a half left on your contract, teams really have to look at it and say, look, am I better off keeping, my version of Marcus Stroman, who did make the list for the Blue Jays, which suggests that I think Marcus Stroman has more trade value than Josh Donaldson, which might sound weird because Donaldson's clearly a better player. But if you were, a team looking to kind of add a guy like Donaldson and you had a good young pitcher like Stroman, would you give up three more years after this one of arbitration salaries for, a good young pitcher for 1 year of Josh Donaldson, who's clearly a better player, but is going to make a lot of money? Or would you just say, you know what? He's going to make $22 million this year. I can just go sign a free agent for $22 million. Obviously, you have to give him more than a one-year deal, but you can buy a player in free agency and then keep your good young player. And so I think that's what teams look at and say, I would love to have Josh Donaldson, but I would like to have Marcus Stroman and $22 million to spend more.
Right, and I think that the point that you make here, but deserves repeating, is that this is not necessarily, to some degree, it's Dave Cameron's opinion. You have attempted to synthesize various facts about, you've attempted to synthesize various ideas and realities at the same time, but you're trying as best you can to reflect what the market is telling everybody about how these players are being valued.
Yeah, I think if we look at what's actually happening in baseball, I do my best, and I'm not perfect, certainly, and I'm sure everyone in baseball would disagree with a number of these rankings, but do my best to kind of look at, what actually happens when players change teams, with their free agency or in trades. How are teams actually valuing young players versus old players, superstars versus role players, looking at the kind of quantity versus quality aspect that a lot of times teams have to choose between. And I think, when you look at the trades that happened this winter, specifically like the Chris Sale and Adam Eaton trades, I think they kind of shine a light on the fact that elite players maybe go for less than we would expect. In terms of Chris Sale's one of the best players in baseball. 3 years under control for three more years. They can get anyone they want. And then it turns out that they couldn't really get anyone they wanted. And so I think when we look at kind of what's happening in baseball is young, controllable talent is what teams want and they covet and they don't really want to give it up.
Right. Now, you mentioned also, there's also the case with Marcus Stroman, right? Josh Donaldson just off the list. Oh, let me first ask you about Josh Donaldson. Josh Donaldson was ranked something like 15th on the list last year.
Right.
Or 14th, I guess. Now, perhaps you've answered it in part, but what can what can make a player tumble so quickly down the rankings?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's heading towards free agency. So, like, the Harper, Machado, and Donaldson are, like, the three guys who ranked significantly highly last year who are still playing, are still, you know, they didn't get injured or anything. And they fell, all three of them fell off the list because they've used up, like, their last season, both since we published this list at the All-Star break last year, they've used their most valuable season, right? Like, all of them were significantly underpaid. Bryce Harper's making, like, what, $6 million this year or something like that. This performance that has gone to the Nationals, especially for the low amount of money they've had to pay him, was tremendously valuable. And so when you think about, like, oh, man, what would you give up for a year and a half of Josh Donaldson? Well, it's less than you would have given up for 2.5 years of Josh Donaldson, obviously, and in an order of magnitude less because Donaldson was making so much less money in this last year than he was next year. And so not only did Donaldson use up one of his best seasons, but he used up one of his cheaper seasons. And so now it's more difficult for a team to fit him into his payroll. So I think when you kind of look at a guy who had 2 or 3 years left of value, teams will give up a ton for that guy. When it gets down to a year and a half or a year or half of a year, the price goes down really fast.
And now when you're discussing Marcus Stroman, and well, I don't know if it's actually in the your profile of Stroman as much as it was in Aaron Nola, the pitcher for the Philadelphia Phillies. But I think that your point is that there are a lot of pitchers for whom one can use the same words to describe them, right?
Yeah.
I think you did with Nola. I think it applies to Stroman too. Is he'll be good as long as he stays healthy, and we don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, James Paxton, Robbie Ray were in that mix too. It's like the end of the trade value list was like a bunch of pitchers who are like, these guys, when they're good, they're awesome, but they're not always good, and they're not always healthy, and they're not always awesome. You don't really know what you're going to get. Like, these guys are not Chris Sale. It's not like you're confident every time Marcus Stroman takes the mound that he's going to throw 8 shutout innings. He can do that. He does do that with some regularity. And then also, he gets hammered sometimes. And you're like, man, when's this guy going to live up to his reputation? When's this guy going to start missing bats like I would expect from a 94-mile-an-hour sinker? So I think with these, like, inconsistent but talented pitchers, there's a lot of upside here. You know, with all these guys, Stroman especially, you can easily look at him and say, like, this guy could be a number one starter. But he's not there yet. And you know, he might not ever get there. You know, a few years ago, we thought Garrett Cole made the leap of, like, one of these inconsistent starters, and then he had a fantastic season, was one of the best pitchers in the National League. It was like, Garrett Cole's finally an ace, and then he went back to being Garrett Cole, and now he looks like a mid-rotation starter again. These guys are challenging, and they're challenging to put a value on because, you know, if you're just dreaming about what he could be, you ask the moon. But then you look at what he actually is, and it's like, well, maybe I would listen on Marcus Stroman if someone gave me a really good offer because I don't actually know what Marcus Stroman is yet.
Right, okay. So Marcus Stroman, one thing he is, in your opinion, is probably the most valuable trade asset employed by the Toronto Blue Jays. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's close between him, Donaldson, and Roberto Osuna. But I do think of that trio, Stroman would return the most because there's so much demand out there right now for controllable starting pitching. You've got teams like the Cubs who, you know, the Astros, these contenders who really want to upgrade their rotation, but they don't want to do it for rental. What they want is a young guy who they can stick in the rotation for years. And I think because of kind of the current market demand for that kind of pitcher, Stroman has a little more value than Donaldson or Osuna.
Right. Yeah. So as soon as one, because we talked about Donaldson a little bit, as soon as another player, and then there's also, you do mention your honorable mentions post, you mentioned also Aaron Sanchez, and then the 18-year-old Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yeah. I mean, these are all good assets. This is, you know, one of the reasons why the Blue Jays aren't ready to tear it down is they have good young players in their system. Guerrero is not quite major league ready, but, you know, potentially is one of the few best prospects in baseball. Some chance. I mean, he's getting promoted to high A ball now that he's played in the futures game. He could probably spend next year in double A, and potentially guys do make the jump from double A to the big leagues. You can see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in Toronto next year as a 19-year-old. It's possible. Not likely, but it's possible. Aaron Sanchez, I think, is a guy who probably would have made this list if he hadn't had the finger issues he's had this year that have limited to like 26 innings. He might have even made the list if he didn't give up like 75 runs to start on Friday night. Like, he was pretty close. Sanchez was definitely in that 51 to 60 range. And if someone wants to say that Sanchez is, you know, should have been number 50 or 49 or something, that's fine. Cause, you know, I think these guys are all pretty similar. But I do think the durability is a little bit of a question with him, especially now that he's had 3 separate DL stints this year for various finger issues. And then even when he's been on the mound, he hasn't been very good. So I think Sanchez is a guy, again, big upside. Obviously last year looked great. You can easily dream on him being a front rotation starter, but he doesn't always pitch like one.
Okay. Now, let's talk about some of the reality. Of course, the reality for the Blue Jays is that there are six games under in, at the break. And if they intend to exhibit any signs of contention, you know, by the trade deadline, that would require a pretty massive effort. An improbable one, not an impossible one. So the likelihood is that they will be trading some of their assets. None of the ones we've just mentioned, I'm guessing. Who do they have, and what sort of value do those players have?
Yeah, I mean, generally when you're a seller and you're not going for a massive rebuild, you just look at, like, your impending free agents. So in the Blue Jays case, it's Marco Estrada's the most obvious one. Jose Bautista is an impending free agent because they're not going to pick up his option given what he did this year. But Bautista doesn't have a lot of trade value at this point. I mean, he went to the free agent market. No one really wanted him, and then he's had another bad half season. So I don't think you get a lot for Bautista at this point, so they'll probably keep him. You know, Joe Smith, if he comes back from the disabled list, he was pitching really well before he got hurt. So if he can show he's healthy over the next couple of weeks, you could probably move him for something. And then Jay Happ's maybe one of the more interesting ones, in the fact that, like, Happ's under control through next year. So you don't have to move him. It's not like you lose him this winter. But there is that demand for controllable starting pitchers. Happ's not a young guy, but he is someone that a team could look at and say, I'm not just getting a rental. Maybe a team like the Brewers, who wants to buy carefully, would say, hey, you know, we think Jay Happ can help us, and, you know, we're willing to give up some real value because we also have him for next year. So I think the Blue Jays would probably at least have to listen on Jay Happ.
Do the Blue Jays have any players who would become, who would net them compensation in the draft?
No. So, like, the new system, the qualifying offer, in order to receive a first-round pick, like you previously would when you made a qualifying offer, the free agent has to sign a contract in excess of $50 million. So Joe Smith's not doing that. Marco Estrada's probably not doing that. Like, you could have maybe thought that Estrada would get $50 million last winter, but he's not pitched very well this year, and he's 35 or 36. He's not young. So the odds of Estrada getting over $50 million are not very good. So at this point, making either of those guys the qualifying offer would be a bad idea.
Does this mean that there are going to be a lot of contracts for $49 million?
No, not necessarily. I mean, you'd think that, oh, it's an easy way to game the system, but there's no real reason for the player to, like, take a $40 million discount to save the team a draft pick. So I think, like, the guys that would clearly clear $50 million, they're going to get the same money regardless. Like, it's not going to affect them. A guy who might have signed for $52 previously might take $49 now and get, like, you know, extra suite on the road or, like, a nicer private plane a few times a year or something like that. Or, you know, potentially a no trade clause or an opt out. Like, they'll find some non monetary way to get hit those, like, $50 to $55 million guys under 50. But, you know, there weren't that many of those guys to begin with.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. The non monetary, you know, that's how private healthcare started in the United States. You know that?
I did not.
Or it was how it became popular, because during World War II, there were constraints. There were, you know, mandates on how much businesses could pay their employees. So they started to offer them various forms of assets that were non-monetary, including health insurance as a sweetener for.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, that's how that expanded.
This would be a better story if I remembered the name, but there was some international prospect last year that the Rangers signed, and in his contract they had to buy him two horses.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think the league actually had to, like, put an economic value on the horses for, like, CBA luxury tax reasons or something. Like, they had to figure out, like, what do these horses cost?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I actually don't know much about the horse market, do you?
I don't know anything about the horse market. Yeah,
I know. I assume you could figure it out pretty quickly. Yeah. I don't think they're cheap, though.
No, yeah. I think they were probably tens of thousands of dollars each.
Yeah, that's a pretty good clause. That's a very interesting one. Okay, Dave Cameron. So we've talked about that. I don't know. What does Jay Happ return? What did you say? He's like an example of a player who's been traded. What's a comp for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's going to be he will not get you a top 100 prospect. You're not going to get a, you know, Bo Bichette or, you know, like one of these, like, future, but he can get you someone interesting, maybe like a live arm who's got some command problems a couple years away, or a lower ceiling guy who's closer to the big leagues who can maybe help you next year. I think if the Blue Jays are serious about contending again in 2018, which it sounds like they are, if they're going to keep Donaldson and Osuna and Stroman, they're not going to go for a blow it up plan, then you're probably looking at someone who, like, okay, if I trade Jay Happ, maybe I need a starter who I can keep for next year and then a little bit beyond that. So maybe you just make a starter trade and you say, like, give me your AAA guy who you don't think is quite ready to help you for a couple more years, or AA pitcher or something like that. And, you know, hopefully I can turn him into a starting pitcher that I can use for the next 3 or 4 years. So get a little bit more future value in exchange for some present value.
Yeah. Who's the next Jimmy Nelson?
If I knew that, then I would probably be working for a team.
Jimmy Nelson he was a second round pick out of Alabama. That doesn't seem like it's necessarily the most promising profile for someone to become a very good pitcher.
Well, he wasn't a very good pitcher until like 2 months ago.
Yeah, yeah. Good job, Jimmy Nelson. Anyway, okay, Dave Cameron. This is the part of the program where I provide some sort of dispatch on minor leaguers, Blue Jays minor leaguers.
This is the part where I tune out.
Well, no, but it's going to be very brief. Okay. Here's the dispatch: is that the Futures game occurred, and 18-year-old Vladimir Guerrero recorded 2 hits during it, including a well struck single. I don't know what the launch angle and the velocity were, exit velocity, but they're pretty good ones, I thought. And it was 99-mile-per-hour fastball from prospect Tanner Scott. So that's promising. An 18-year-old who can hit a 99-mile-per-hour fastball.
Yeah, Vlad Guerrero's good.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'm not particularly great with swing mechanics, but he doesn't necessarily look precisely like his father, even though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, I think like people just assume like, oh, Vladdy's kid, he's going to be like this impatient hacker who swings at everything. Like, he's got more walks than strikeouts. He's kind of like the antithesis of his father.
Yeah, and he's also got a slightly different body. Vlad Guerrero Sr. was kind of, I feel like he was kind of chiseled, and because he always walked like an older man.
Yeah, he looked like his body was broken at all times.
Yeah, but the younger Vladimir is like he's a little bit soft.
He's 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's going to be bigger than I think when he's older, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's why they're talking about he's probably a first baseman long term. It's like, okay. I think the very optimistic scenario is you're looking at like, oh, a prodigious hitting teenage prospect who could get to the big leagues quickly as a third baseman, but probably as a first baseman long term, Miguel Cabrera. I mean, he's probably not going to be Miguel Cabrera, but it's not impossible.
Right. Yeah, he is. He's hitting very well. And I think before we started recording, you mentioned he, and not only he, but also Bo Bichette, have been recipients of promotion to AAA. High A.
Yeah.
Dunedin.
To go from low A to AAA would be quite the jump.
High A Dunedin. They would be playing in the Florida State League.
Yeah.
Yes, an 18-year-old in the Florida State League. So that's very promising. Now let us get to. It's not entirely awkward, but typically what we've done here is to look at the week ahead. In the context of what it might mean.
Good news, they're not going to lose for 4 days.
Yeah, so it's a bit confusing in a couple ways. Because when they do return, they'll be playing the Detroit Tigers at Detroit. but I guess the question is, how much does one expect out of them at this point? And what is the sort of best-case scenario? I mean, I assume, obviously, 3 wins is the best-case scenario. But are you looking maybe for certain types of performances? So, for example, Aaron Sanchez was the starter in the game they lost 12-2 at home against Houston. I suppose you'd want something a bit more promising out of Aaron Sanchez, right?
Yeah, you'd like him to not give up 6 runs in the first inning or whatever it was. I think like besides just winning, they need this pitching rotation to look like it can carry them. Because I think at this point, you almost have to give up on this offense being a juggernaut anymore. Like Jose Bautista... is old. Jose Bautista isn't useless, but he's not the Jose Bautista of 2 years ago. Kendrys Morales is not very good. Justin Smoke's having a nice year. You probably can't count on him to last forever. Russell Martin and Troy Tulowitzki are not as good as they used to be. Like, this offense is worse than it has been. So they need a really good starting rotation. And, if Happ and Estrada and Sanchez and Stroman can string together like 3 weeks worth of really good starts, you could be like, hey, look, maybe these guys are going to carry us. Maybe we have the pitching to do it. If Sanchez can't get out of the third inning and Estrada's giving up home runs, you're probably in trouble.
Now, with regard to Francisco Liriano, I assume that he's also a possibility to be traded, yeah?
Yeah, but probably not till August, I would think.
Oh, okay. Why is that?
So the July 31st trade deadline is not like a real trade deadline. It's the non-waiver trade deadline. So generally what happens is teams focus on trading for players in July that wouldn't be available after the waiver trade deadline kicks in.
Okay.
And so a guy who has a, somewhat sizable contract and isn't pitching that well, he's going to clear waivers. Like, no one's going to take on $4 million, $5 million, whatever Liriano has left in his deal this year for to have him on the roster for 7 or 8 starts, right? Like, it's just not worth it. So if you know Liriano can clear waivers, you don't need to trade him in July because you can trade him in August. There's no real sense of urgency to trade for Liriano right now because you can get him 2 weeks later.
What is different about Liriano than it has been in his best seasons?
Because he's worse.
Okay, he's worse, yeah. But if you look at, if you just look at, like, his fastball velocities, for example, they're almost identical over the course of his career. And yet he's gotten these, he's had these peaks and these troughs.
Yeah.
And right now he's, well, it's trough-like.
Yeah. So he's really a guy who's, like, lived with fringy command his entire career. And when it goes from fringy to bad and he falls behind in counts and he has to groove fastballs, hitters tee off on him. And he's a guy who, he doesn't throw a lot of strikes. He doesn't really throw in the zone that much, but he can really fall behind in counts too much. And I think that's when he goes south.
Right. Okay, Dave Cameron, I think that's, well, I think that we've done what we came to do. I can't guarantee that it was good, but I believe that we've gotten to the end of it at the very least.
That is something.
Yeah, it is something. It sure is. Well, thank you very much, Dave Cameron.
You're welcome, Carson Cistulli.
Yeah, allow me to say that you are Dave Cameron, the managing editor of Fangraphs. I'm Carson Cistulli, and this has been the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.